Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for all of you today. My guest will be Adrienne Esposito. She's the co-founder and executive director of the Citizens Campaign for the Environment, and I'll tell you more about her when she comes on in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the news, some things I'm involved in, and some events you certainly want to go to, and of course share my weekly recipe with you. So first, I just want to share that tomorrow I am actually doing a one-day slow food talk and cooking demonstration at Old Westbury Gardens as part of their week-long adult camp. And every day they had a different topic. I think today's bird watching, one day was wellness, photography, nature writing. And on Friday, tomorrow, there is a talk on the slow food movement and the impact our food choices have on our health and the environment. And I'm really excited to be leading that up. And I will also be doing a cooking demo and serving everybody a farm-to-table lunch. So if you are free tomorrow, I believe there's still some space, so go to the Old Westbury Gardens website and sign up, and I will see you there. Lots of wonderful things going on around the city. If you've not gotten up to Storm King Art Center up in Cornwall, New York, you really want to go and see this show, Artists on Climate Change. It's a sculpture garden, and it's really such a beautiful setting. It's a wonderful day to just go and walk around some beautiful, beautiful fields and come upon different sculptures. But right now, they're having an ongoing show of 17 contemporary artists, including NRDC's artist-in-resident Jenny Kendler. And it's just a great show talking about climate change, you know, different artists' reaction to climate change. So that's something worth seeing. And then tonight, there's a Sip and Savor from the Garden State at the James Beard House. If you are free tonight, there may still be space, actually, I'm not sure. It is tonight. But it's highlighting food and wine from New Jersey, all sustainably grown and really delicious. So James Beard Foundation always has wonderful events, so that's worth checking out. And then there's also this evening a local foraging event in the weeds with local foragers Jamie Young and Will Horowitz, and that's at the Museum of Food and Drink. And that should also be wonderful to, you know what to look for when you take a walk in the park or on a nature trail, what plants are around that are actually edible. Worth checking out. And then this weekend, up at the Eagle Street Rooftop Farm during the day, they're having an open market and volunteer day from 1 to 4. And if you haven't been to Eagle Street Rooftop Farm in Brooklyn, that is certainly worth visiting. And then in the evening, they're having a roof-to-plate pizza party, and that should also be fun. And that starts at 7 p.m., only $15. So you could spend the whole day at Eagle Street this weekend. Also on Saturday, the North Shore Land Alliance is having a walk in the woods at Young's Farm. And Young's Farm is a local farm that has been transitioning towards organic. And so it's local on Long Island here in Old Brookville. And I know the farmer there, and that should definitely be a fun day as well. August 28th to the 30th, there's the Climate Reality Project going on in California. I actually was signed up for that and ended up not being able to go. But climate change has been in the news so much, and I'm really excited. My guest today will be talking a lot about climate change and the impact some of the current administration's decisions are having on climate change. But there's a healthy eating conference also going on August 26th to the 29th for people in the health-related fields. So that's going on in Asheville, North Carolina. It's an healthy eating in practice. It's a hands-on conference for physicians and other healthcare professionals. So if you know a physician that you'd like to get more connected to food and prescribing food instead of medicine. This is a conference they'll want to go to. On September 6th and September 8th is the rallies and marches going on for climate, jobs, and justice. And New York City, because of the West Indies parade on September 8th, they're having their big march on Thursday evening, September 6th, from 5:30 to 8:30, down in Battery Park. So that's September 6th, Thursday night, big, big march and rally for climate, justice, and jobs in New York City. But then on September 8th, the rest of the country is coming together and mobilizing rallies and marches all over the country. Big one in Washington, D.C. There's one right here on Long Beach, Long Island. So check out, you can go to the Climate, Jobs, and Justice website, and they also have a Facebook page, and find out where in your area you can join in on this very important march. It's really essential that we all show up, stand up, and take action, and this is one way that you can do that. On September 25th, Slow Food North Shore is having another Snail of Approval dinner at the Perennial Restaurant in Garden City. You can find out more information on the Slow Food North Shore website. And on October 8th, Food Tank is once again coming to New York with their big summit at NYU. So that's an all-day summit with incredible chefs and food activists and justice activists. So they all come together, and the Food Tank puts together just a wonderful event. So if you can make it to that, I believe there's still space there, but it does sell out. So check it out at the Food Tank website. And now I'd like to share with you my recipe. Oh, actually, before I share with my recipe, I want to share with you some really exciting news that I'm sure many of you saw. Monsanto actually has been ordered to reward a young man who was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He was awarded $289 million from Monsanto because Monsanto knew that their Roundup causes cancer. And they showed evidence that showed that glyphosate, which is a human carcinogen, they've had this information, and yet they continue to sell it. And our EPA continues to allow it. So what does that say about our EPA? So that's the Environmental Protection Agency, for those that don't know. But anyway, this was a huge, huge award, and it is setting the stage for thousands of more plaintiffs coming and charging Monsanto with causing their cancer. So it'll be really interesting to watch this. So please stay tuned for that. And then also I wrote about that all organic dairy is not created equal, and you can find out more about that on the Cornucopia's website. They have a list of the different dairies. They rate everything as to which dairies are actually being raised organic, because there's greenwashing going on all over. Now that people have realized that people want organic and that the organic market is a valuable resource for people, people are using the organic term and trying to market organic all the time. And the USDA has actually bought out a lot of the small farmers and put in factory farms. And it's just really, really terrible. You know, you buy organic milk from Costco or even Trader Joe's for that matter, and it's not the same thing as buying organic milk from a small dairy farmer. So you do want to go to the Cornucopia website and pull up their organic dairy scorecard. They also have a scorecard for eggs. All organic eggs, just like with dairy, are not created equal. And so it's really important that we as consumers educate ourselves and really get to the bottom of what is the food that we're eating, knowing our farmer. You know, there's that line, you know your farmer, know your food. And it's so true. I mean, you really need to know who is growing your food, who is taking care of it, because there's people that just care about the money, and then there's people that actually care about the quality of the food and the animals and the land and the consumer. So before you buy organic eggs or organic dairy, definitely use the Cornucopia website as a resource. Environmental Working Group also has great scorecards, and those are two websites that you really want to have in your back pocket. So now I'd like to share with you my recipe. It's a very simple recipe, and it just was inspired by what I was picking out of the garden. So this is a green bean and cherry tomato salad. I have so many green beans growing. I planted two different types that both were on the Arc of Taste, which is a slow food biodiversity little cabinet filled with all these heirloom seeds that are in threat of being extinct. So we are trying to save these different varieties by planting them. So I have jack beans and Christmas beans. And I pulled out 8 cups of green beans, along with 3 cups of cherry tomatoes, 1 red onion, 6 tablespoons olive oil, 4 tablespoons of pomegranate vinegar, which is really a nice little change. Usually would be using red wine vinegar, and I was actually out, so I had pomegranate vinegar, and I used that, and it just came out really nice, added a nice fruity flavor to the dish. 4 tablespoons of chopped shallots, 2 teaspoons Dijon mustard, 2 teaspoons grated lemon zest, 1/4 cup of chopped basil, 1/4 cup of chopped Italian parsley, 2 cloves garlic, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, black pepper as well, and I put some flake salt on top just to finish it at the end. And I added 1/2 cup of toasted slivered almonds. You could also use walnuts, or you could even use candied pecans if you wanted. And so ahead of time, I actually pickled the onions because I wasn't sure that they would have enough time to pickle in the dish I was making. So I just cut up a red onion really fast, put it into a bowl with 1/2 cup of red wine vinegar, 1 tablespoon of organic sugar, and 1 teaspoon of salt, and just let that sit for about an hour. And then I drained it and then added that red onion to this dish. And I made a dressing with the pomegranate vinegar, the olive oil, the shallots, the garlic, the mustard, the lemon zest, and set that aside. And then, meanwhile, I blanched the green beans in a little salted water for 3 to 5 minutes, just till they got a little tender and bright green in color. And then I transferred them out into a bowl of ice water. And that's called blanching. And that, you know, but that shock of going from the hot water to the cold water locks in the beautiful bright green color and cools it fast so the beans don't get mushy. Then I drained them and I laid it out on a towel and patted it dry so that they'd be dry before I put them into the salad. Then I cut the cherry tomatoes in half. I removed the onion from the vinegar marinade and I tossed everything together along with the basil and the parsley. And I garnished it with some toasted almonds. And it was just delicious, and I made it for a big family barbecue, and it was really a hit. So I hope you all get to make that. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest this week. As I said, Adrian Esposito is the co-founder and executive director of Citizens Campaign for the Environment. She holds a degree in geology and environmental science from CW Post University, and she founded the Citizens Campaign for the Environment 34 years ago. And Adrian's an advocate and outspoken advocate for protecting public health and our environment. And she works with a variety of community members, engaging campaigns, and really inspires people to get up, show up, and speak up, which is just what I'm talking about today. You know, with the climate march coming up and everything, we really all have to take personal action here because our government is certainly not doing it for us. And she's active on issues with remediation of toxic plumes, protection and preservation of land and water resources. She supports large-scale renewable energy projects and pesticide reduction. And I'm just thrilled to have Adrian with us. Adrian, you with me? Sure. So I've been perusing your website, and it's just amazing all the things that the Citizens Campaign for the Environment is involved in. You know, I guess I'd like to first start by talking about our water here on Long Island, since that's something that has been in the news a lot, people not being able to drink water out of their faucets because of contamination. Can you share with us what contaminants are threatening our water here on Long Island, and talk a little bit about some of the campaigns you're working on with in regards
Absolutely.
To the water?
I mean, Long Island is very unique. It is classified by the United States EPA as a sole source aquifer. And simply what that means is 100% of the water we drink comes from directly underneath our feet. And it's in layers. Think about a layer cake, only with the layers definitely uneven and a little bit askew. So underneath the land is our water. Now, that means everything we put on the surface of the land eventually seeps down and mixes with that underground water system or aquifer system. And the fact that now we have 3 million people living on top of the land, what could possibly go wrong? Well, as it turns out, a few things. So a lot of what we're dealing with right now are waste products or chemicals, what we call legacy waste. So, for instance, the industries back in the 50s and the 60s, there really weren't many environmental laws, and they didn't really realize back then anyway that what they dumped on the surface would contaminate drinking water. So that has led to a number of toxic sites, because when industry dumps chemicals, it goes and seeps down into the aquifer system and causes, obviously, pollution. But it's not just industry. People like to blame industry, but unfortunately, sometimes we've met the enemy, and the enemy is us. A lot of it can be pesticides. Unfortunately, people put a lot of pesticides on their lawns. A lot of it can be even these new emerging chemicals. So what I mean by that is, for instance, firefighters, when they used that foam suppressant to put out fires or to train to put out fires back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, there was a chemical in there called PFCs, which they didn't realize would seep down into the ground and cause contamination. And a lot of places right now that are out east on Long Island in specific are finding this chemical, which is highly toxic, all over in their drinking water wells. And that's the problem. You cannot drink water that's contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the issues. Another one I just want to mention to folks, an emergent issue is called 1,4-dioxane. It's got a very chemical name. But basically, it's something that's found, unfortunately, in, believe it or not, 47% of all household products, like shampoo and laundry soap and other bath gels, and even, believe it or not, baby products. And this is not an ingredient. It's actually a byproduct of the manufacturing process. So you'll never find it on a label, but unfortunately, it's still in these very, very common products. So one thing our organization did was we wanted to know what products have this chemical. And people were calling us and asking us, and we didn't know because it's not on the label. And, you know, there's nothing that really can reveal this information. So we got a grant from the Long Island Community Foundation, and they provided funding for us to test 30 very common household products, things like Tide detergent, you know, all detergent, and then different body washes and baby shampoos and other products. And we released the report about a month ago. And what we found, unfortunately, was that almost all the products we tested had some level of 1,4-dioxane in them, but some of the levels were shocking, and some of the products had none. So it was really a range. So I'll tell you, the product that had the most chemicals, and it was kind of funny because we weren't even going to test this product, but we said, you know what? We think a lot of women go and use the Victoria's Secret bath gel. Well, we found out Victoria's Secret. And it's really not a good one. No wonder she keeps it a secret. Because her bath gels, and we tested two different kinds, have between 15,000 and 17,000 parts per billion of this chemical. And the EPA's recommended health standard is 0.35. So let me say that again. The EPA's, there's no drinking water limit and there's no real legal limit. So this is just an advisory limit that the EPA has, but it's 0.35. And the Victoria's Secret bath products had between 15,000 and 17,000 parts per billion. So
wow,
that's pretty scary.
Yeah,
you know, followed closely by Tide laundry soap, just so you know. So, you know, the bottom line is, you know, we've been calling for the FDA, Federal Drug Administration, to mandate that this toxic chemical is taken out of these products. They can do that. Some manufacturing companies have done that. But
you said it's a byproduct. It happens from the manufacturing. It's not something that they
exactly
actually add in.
You're correct.
Right?
Yep.
So they have to
correct.
Find a different way of making it so that it doesn't create that chemical.
That's one thing they could do, or they can strip the chemical out in the final final part of the manufacturing process. And some of them have done that, to their credit, and not all of them. But I just want to mention some products came out without any 1,4-dioxane, like seventh generation. Aveeno, we tested two different types of Aveeno. One was a baby product. The other one was the shampoo. That had no detection of it. So there are some products out there. Method, the soaps, they didn't have any 1,4-dioxane. So there was some good news, and there was some products mm-hmm. that are available to buy without this chemical. The chemical is listed by the U.S. EPA as a probable human carcinogen. And that's why it's so important that we avoid it. But I just want to mention one other thing about this is that it's not only, you know, that we should avoid contact with it in our shampoo and our bath gel and our laundry soap, but when we use those products and they go down the drain, many times they're ending up in our drinking water system on Long Island or in our marine environment. So we mm-hmm. want to avoid those for both of those reasons.
Right. But now if the manufacturers just removed it from the end product, then they have this toxic waste that they have to deal with disposing of.
Yeah, but it's easier for them to dispose of safely a known toxic waste than it is for it to
right.
get in our drinking water and then for us
right.
to try to filter it out later.
Right. Well, all I'm
right?
saying
I mean,
is there's a way to make it without without creating the chemical. That would be ideal.
That would be ideal. That would be the most ideal.
Another thing you wrote about is the PFAS, and I'm not sure what that stands for, but I know that's also found in our drinking water. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. That's the one that was found in a lot of the old firefighting foams, and it's very hard to say firefighting foams on the radio, but they used to use it as a fire suppressant chemical. And therefore, we're finding it around things like airports because they would do, you know, firefighting training at airports. We're finding it at the training centers themselves or sometimes even where there was a huge fire and there was a lot of the fire foam used to put out that fire. So this is new. This is what we call an emerging chemical. And it's also something that they're just learning a lot about. But it was also used, believe it or not, as a non-stick chemical for Teflon and other products such as, you know, stain-resistant on couches and clothes and whatnot. So there was a lot of diverse use of that chemical, which have been phased out. It's been phased out of Teflon, phased out of stain-resistant products. But this is, again, a legacy waste that is now still around, and we're now suffering some of the consequences for.
Yeah. You know, our country is so different than the European Union where they test things first and before they allow them into the public arena. And we actually allow just about anything, I think. And then we have to wait to see how toxic it is before we then have to push to try to get it removed. It's just so backwards.
It's bad. I mean, someone described it best when they said, in Europe, the chemical is considered guilty till proven innocent. In America, it's considered innocent till proven guilty.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
That's pretty damn problematic for America.
Yes, it absolutely is. So we have a big problem now, obviously, with the current administration, who doesn't want to acknowledge climate change, period, let alone science. And so they are working really hard to roll back some of the Environmental Protection Agency's regulations. They're actually even trying to do away with the Environmental Protection Agency. So can you talk to us a little bit about some of the rollbacks that the current administration is trying to do on the Obama administration's rules, such as the Clean Power Plan, the Clean Water Act, all these different environmental protections that they put in place that right now the current administration is trying to undo?
But there's so many, we don't have time. Yes, I can. So let me start out by saying, let's remember, the EPA was instituted 45 years ago in 1972 by Richard Nixon, not a president who was known for being, you know, a crazy liberal who wanted to, you know, walk around protecting the environment. He was instituted
right.
45 years ago, the EPA, because rivers were going on fire, and that's how polluted they were in Ohio. So this mm-hmm. came out of a bipartisan consensus for clean air, clean water, clean soil. It was something they felt every American needed and was entitled to. How clean water and clean air and clean soil now became the enemy of the people is really unclear to us. Nobody's out there saying, let's make America sick again. I don't hear that being clamored for. So, unfortunately, it's Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Air Act, every act you could think of is being attacked. Let's mm-hmm. just mention a few highlights, so to speak. Number one is the Clean Power Plan. Simply put, the Clean Power Plan was a regulation to cut carbon dioxide emissions 30% below the 2005 levels by the year 2030. That's all. It wasn't crazy. It wasn't exactly radical, but it was helpful. It was good. It was a step in the right direction. It wanted to largely reduce pollution from coal-fired power plants. Well, the current administration is saying that this is an overstep of federal law. Why is that? You know, you need to have some type of guidance from the government about keeping, air emissions in check. This was very reasonable. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. They're now trying to do away with the Clean Power Plan and allow for carbon dioxide emissions, particularly from coal. This is all about keeping coal alive. You know, it's like they can't understand that as we learn more, that we have to do better. So now we know that coal is a big polluter. There's no such thing as clean coal. That's
right. But one of Trump's big things is like, we're going to bring back coal. I mean, he's out of control, this man.
Well, it doesn't make sense. I mean, as we get more technology, that's like saying, let's not use the computer. Let's bring back the typewriter. We need, what about all those jobs of the people who used to make the typewriter? Nobody says that. Nobody says bring
right.
back the rotary phone, okay? So, you know, we develop technologies. We move forward. We advance as a culture and a society and as a nation. Coal is an energy source of the past. I'm sorry. I know that a lot of people have jobs wrapped up in that. And for those people, you don't discard them. You do what's called retraining. You retrain them. It's called just compensation in the environmental movement, where we actually have fought for funding to retrain people who work on energy such as coal, to be retrained for jobs that are more relevant in today's society, so that nobody is really left behind or left discarded, but rather they can advance as the technology advances also. So that's what we should focus on, rather than holding on to a dirty, dangerous, polluting, degrading technology. But you have to think forward in order to do that, and we're not seeing that from this current administration. So the Clean Power Plan is one. Last week, the president decided that we should reallow asbestos in construction material. Who is clamoring to bring back asbestos?
Right.
Asbestos is one of the dangerous, most most dangerous substances. It's a natural fiber. Yes, that's true. But so is arsenic, and we don't put that in our water. So asbestos is known to cause three types of cancer. You know, it's a lung cancer, obviously. Asbestosis, which is cancer of the lung lining, and mesothelioma, which is another form of lung cancer. Why would we bring back asbestos? This it defies logic. Doesn't make sense. We're fine without it. It's not even needed.
Right.
So I'm sorry. So anyway, those are two examples that really defy logic, bring America back to the dark ages, and don't advance us with the current knowledge and the current science and the current abilities that we have in today's society.
Mm-hmm. And he's also rolling back the fuel efficiency for cars.
Yes. And that puts us at a disadvantage on the global competitive market. Every other, you know, nation is finding ways to have greater fuel efficiency, every other developed nation. And, you know, why would we do that to America? And, as we know, oil prices are fluctuating between $60 and $72 per barrel. When they get up towards that $70 to $75 range, gas prices go up. People look for more greater fuel efficiency. It helps the working class budget to have a fuel efficient vehicle. Not only does it help the environment, it helps everyday people with the ability to meet the bills. Why would we not provide that? So, yeah, you're right.
It's
about the environment, but it's also about, you know, using available knowledge and technology and science to just grow as a society.
Right. Yeah, but he doesn't believe in science, so we have to figure out another way. But that's why, you know, and I know this is something you advocate so much as well as I do, that we have to get our everyday people that we're talking about to become active citizens so that the amount of people taking to the streets and getting upset about these issues, rather than just going, oh, he did another thing, and just going back to your everyday work, without writing those letters and signing those petitions and showing up at marches and, you know, getting people out there to vote in a more environmentally friendly way. It's just so essential. You know, it's going to take everybody
Absolutely.
To really turn this around.
Yes. No, it's true. And people who are engaged in democracy, that's how democracy flourishes. That's how we stop dictatorships. Because people are engaged. You can't just be educated. You have to be educated about the issues and engage. That's the key. You know, at CCE, Citizens Can Make the Environment, where I work, our motto is get up, show up, and speak up. That's what makes America great. That's what makes change. And elected officials, all of them, need to know the public's watching, they understand what's happening, and they care. That they care. And, you know, it's not just the president's crazy policies on the environment. It's all of our federal leaders who have decided to say nothing. They are just as at fault, just as responsible, just as guilty as
Absolutely.
The leadership.
Now, when I met you, I met you a couple of months ago at that open forum legislation talk roundtable with Senator Hahn about Long Island pesticide use. Whatever happened with that? Did he vote to allow the pesticide or not?
No. Actually, I think that was Senator Hannan, and that was about the fertilizer bill. And the
Right.
fertilizer bill died in the Senate. We like to say that sometimes Albany is a place where all good bills go to die, but it did not succeed. I will say one good bill that Senator Hannan championed and did pass, and this is good news for all people throughout New York, and I actually think that this legislation will be emulated throughout the nation. It's a bill that, for the first time in New York history, will charge the pharmaceutical drug manufacturers a fee that they have to chip in to a pot of money for New York, and then allow all the pharmacies that have more than 10 pharmacy chains, like CVS and Rite Aid, they have to now do safe disposal of pharmaceutical drugs, so that people aren't dumping them down the drain and polluting our water, or the drugs aren't getting into the hands of people who shouldn't have them. So this is a great bill that will keep unwanted pharmaceutical drugs out of the drinking water supply and out of our coastal water environment. So that bill did pass. That was CCE's priority, one of our two priority bills this legislative session. And we're going to go back next year and continue to work on reduced nitrogen in fertilizer bill in fertilizers.
Yeah, well, pharmaceuticals in our drinking water is a whole other problem that we didn't even get into. But, disposing of your drugs in a proper manner. I mean, I know all police stations take pharmaceuticals to have safe disposal, but that's really
Yes.
important. I mean, so many people just throw them out, and
They
that's
throw
really
them out
bad.
and they don't realize. And actually, it's not really people's fault. The EPA and the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, they used to tell people, keep you know, put your old drugs, flush them, to get them out of the closet. Not realizing, fast forward, that now 40% of all rivers have trace amounts of pharmaceutical drugs in them. And on Long Island in Suffolk County, the United States Geological Service has tested groundwater, and as it turns out, half of our groundwater has some. It's tiny amounts. I don't want anybody to panic, but they can be detected of different pharmaceutical drugs. The two most common being anticonvulsant and antibiotics. And we like to say that drugs should be dispensed by a doctor, not by your faucet. So it's
Right.
very, very important people safely dispose of them. I do want to put a plug in here for King Kullen grocery stores. So if anybody lives next to a King Kullen that has a pharmacy, they have been providing this great program that has this big blue box by the pharmacy, and it's all free to the public. People can go in, just take their unwanted drugs or expired prescriptions. Yeah, it's like a mailbox. You open it up, put your drugs in, and you walk away. And in the last 3 years, King Kullen has safely disposed of 10,000 pounds of unwanted pharmaceutical drugs. So it's been great.
Great. Yeah. And like I said, police stations also do that. I actually was
You're
at the police
absolutely
station
right.
dropping off some, a relative passed away, and I was throwing all this stuff out and went to the police station. The box was so full, they actually had to, I had to wait there while they, unlocked it and dumped it and reset it up so that there was room. So people are using the service. I was happy to see
They are.
that. Yeah. Let's take a couple minute break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about food waste and recycling and how that's affecting our landfills, et cetera. So, everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Adrian Esposito from the Citizens Campaign for the Environment. Be right back.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Have you ever noticed how pathetic the mainstream news is and how it's biased, vague, and utterly devoid of any objectivity? Do you or anyone you know still believe America is a democracy? Well, I insist you tune into the Plutocracy Report with Vince Marcanti right here on PRN every Friday at 4 o'clock. I'll explain how things truly are, like America is a veiled plutocracy, and I'll show you the evidence is everywhere. Once we remove the program bias and deception, our news outlets convey the scripted narrative of the deep state while distracting and dividing us. It's time to break the dichotomy of division so we can finally unite and remove these sociopathic plutocrats from power. Join me on the Plutocracy Report with Vince Marcanti.
Known as a gadget guy, but I love gadgets that really do the trick, like the new app. The Progressive Radio Network has an app, thanks to our friends at Audio Now. Hey, this is Mark Farrell, host of Insight on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we broadcast live out of New York City. But if you can't catch the show live, no frets. It's always archived. It's always on the app. Download it now, listen later, whenever you want. The Progressive Radio Network app is available from our friends at Audio Now. Check it out.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and my guest today is Adrian Esposito from the Citizens Campaign for the Environment. And we've been talking about lots of things, and we're just going to start talking about food waste and food waste recycling, what can be done to mitigate the problem around food waste. Adrian, you back with me?
I sure am.
Great. So, food waste has been in the news a lot. I know I've been talking about it a lot with my audience. Can you talk a little bit about food waste recycling and how we can try to mitigate the problem through composting, or, you know, what ideas does your organization have to try to address this problem?
We actually have a lot of great ideas. You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, food waste, according to the EPA, makes about 17 or 18% of our waste stream in America. So, you know, we throw out a lot of food. That's not good news. But the reality is that this is food that can be redirected for other uses. So there's two types of food waste, right? There's the kind that, you know, restaurants maybe throw out, or catering facilities, that can actually be redirected to food pantries or homeless shelters or other or people need it to the hungry. That's good food. But then there's also what's called food scraps, which is just all about food waste that you're not redirecting to anyone, because it truly is waste. But it's really not waste. It's a resource. That's the food that can be turned into compost. So there was a program proposed by Governor Cuomo for the last 2 years, and it is a food waste recycling bill. And it's a bill that would require that any restaurant or catering facility or even grocery store that has more than 2 tons of food waste per week redirect that food waste to those in need. And we, CCE, worked with a lot of the other groups, but also a lot of the food pantry groups and the groups that feed the homeless. We all love this bill. And actually, grocery stores like Stop and Shop are now doing it voluntarily. They're working with the, Long Island Harvest and the nutrition centers to really redirect their food that they can't put on the shelves anymore because maybe it's expired. But frankly, it's still good food. You know, who hasn't here had a piece of bread that, you know, was a day old? So that has been a huge help to these agencies to help, you know, their mission of providing food pantries and feeding people in need. But the other part is the food waste, and that can actually on Long Island, well, this is very good news. We're building the Long Island compost which is located in Yaphank, is building what's called an anaerobic digester. What that is that it's a new technology that's used all over Europe and not quite so much in America yet, but it's a technology that takes food waste and turns it into compost and also harvests the gas that's produced as from it to a compressed natural gas, which is actually considered renewable energy by the New York State DEC. So it creates energy and it creates compost. So
sounds great.
It's a very good thing, and it should break ground. I'm knocking on wood as I say this, by the end of the year, and should be built in 18 months. And that'll be a great place for places like New York City, but also colleges that have a lot of food scraps, hospitals that have food scraps, other facilities that have food scraps, to redirect it to the digester so that it's not being sent to a landfill where we have limited space, but rather it's being reused for a good purpose.
Mm-hmm. And what about recycling programs for things like, the deep frying oil that so many of these fast food restaurants use, or regular restaurants as well, using that for energy for vehicles and things like that? Is there any type of program that you know of?
It can be done. It hasn't really caught on. They've been working on that for about, I don't even know how long, to tell you the truth, maybe like 10 or 20 years. I actually rode in a vehicle once that had done that, converted it, the engine. It did smell a lot like French fries, a lot. it did. I was like, oh, my God, I don't want a French fry craving here. But, it's just not a technology that has taken off. It can be done. It has been done. But they've kind of skipped over it to look for other types of, clean engine technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talking about clean energy, which would you rather, wind farm off of the coast of Long Island or drilling sites? I know there's been a lot of push to try to get a wind farm off of the coast of Long Island. Right now there is a wind farm operating off of the coast of Rhode Island that is, I believe, being very successful. And yet there's also a big push to do, from our current administration once again, to do drilling off of the coast of Long Island. Can you talk a little bit about where that is at and who's winning the fight, if we can call it a race?
We actually don't know who's winning the fight. I think we're all in the ring fighting. We're going to see who comes out the victor here. I'm not sure. But, yes, you're exactly right. There is America has one tiny offshore wind farm. It's right off of Block Island. And the good news is that wind farm, it's just 5 turbines. It is now supplying 100% of the electricity needs for Block Island. That's great news, because prior to that, Block Island used, believe it or not, diesel engines to supply their energy. And they were noisy, they were polluting, and they were expensive. So Block Island, wanted the offshore wind farm. So the 5 turbines were built by a company called Deepwater Wind, and people on Block Island saw a 30% reduction in electricity costs and are thrilled because now they have clean energy. In Europe, there's offshore wind farms all over the place. I mean, literally all over the place. I've seen them in Spain. They have them off of Great Britain. They have them off of almost every country. Denmark has 21% of all its electricity comes from wind power. America's, again, very behind the curve here. Our second wind farm, the battle is going on right now off of Montauk. This would be a wind farm that's 30 miles offshore. No one would see it unless you were Superman and you had X-ray eyes, but I don't know of anybody like that. So it would be 15 turbines, and it would create 90 megawatts of power. And the reason that this was proposed is because the South Fork of Long Island needs more electricity. And are requiring and using more electricity. You know, everybody plugs everything in these days. That's the way it works. So they'd have to either build a power plant or have an offshore wind farm to meet the increasing electricity needs. So, again, this is deep water wind. They have this proposal. It is advancing. It is getting, you know, some of its permits. It's another, you know, I think, another 6 to 8 months away of getting the rest of the permits, but it has to go through a rigorous environmental review process. And it's controversial. You know, the mm-hmm. fishermen are against it, the commercial fishermen. The recreational fishermen are for it. It seems like the public is for it. People have questions, and that's good. People should have questions. But you have to remember, we're either going to do renewable energy resources or we're going to rely on dirty fossil fuels. The current administration wants us to rely on dirty fossil fuels. That's why they want to open up the entire East Coast to drilling for oil and natural gas exploration. That's insane. You know, we totally rely, not just us, not just New York, but every coastal state,
except
North
Florida.
Carolina, Virginia, Florida, we rely on our coastline to, you know, to really have a successful economy and tourism industry. So it doesn't make sense.
And our food supply, our ocean, our, you know, I mean, the potential for the contamination that could come from opening up the coast to drilling is just ridiculous. It's just, the risk is just too high. Totally not worth it.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, commercial fishermen, frankly, should worry more about opening up our seas to oil than they should about a small offshore wind farm. Really. That is a bigger concern. That is a more long-lasting concern. That can have devastating impacts on fish stocks and fish migration and the overall economy, but also the impact of one oil spill can last for years, if not decades. They should be fighting for offshore wind, not fighting against offshore wind. It's very foolish.
Yes, absolutely. And now they were talking about doing one right off of Long Beach that was kind of in between New York City Harbor and New Jersey. Do you know what's going on with that?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm asking you. Go ahead.
Yes, the plan right now, everything's only in the planning process. But Stat Oil, which is a Norwegian oil company, which is now moving into the offshore wind development field because oil, and that's what we want, frankly. We want oil companies to transition. Again, here's the transition we were talking about earlier, away from oil and more towards the renewable technology. They bought, they bidded, like all other companies did, wind companies from all across the globe, including in New York, bid for bottom land rights off of the South Shore of Long Island, and Statoil won the bid by paying the highest price. So they now own 40,000 acres of bottom lands, and there's a process being put into place because this is new. The process doesn't exist yet, but it's now being crafted and put into place about how areas would be developed for wind turbines offshore. So we have a state agency and we have federal agencies all working together. We have multiple state agencies and multiple federal agencies, I should say, working together to craft a plan, but also a process that includes a lot of stakeholder and public input on how this would be done. So we're in the middle of that process. It is moving. But it is a thoughtful, thorough process. And I got to say, they're doing some great research on things like whale migration, turtle migration, any kind of marine mammals, to look to see where their migratory pathways are and how we can do this, and bird migration, by the way, so how this can be done and it needs to be done in the most sensitive, science-based way possible.
Mm-hmm. So Stat Oil is looking to, they're leaning towards wanting to set up a wind farm as opposed to oil and gas drilling?
They're not leaning towards. They only got the rights to do a wind farm. They can't do an oil drill there. The rights, the bottom land rights, were for wind development only.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. No, there would not be any giveaway for oil rights. Absolutely. And some people were saying, well, they can just make a different permit. And it's not that easy, okay? It doesn't happen that way. So
right, but for a while, there wasn't, I think Spectra Oil was trying to start a whole, to set up a whole oil depository, you know, a place to accept oil and to send oil out as well as to do drilling right there.
Well,
do you remember that?
I don't know if they were going to do drilling because it's not allowed. You can't say you're going to do drilling when it's actually, there's no federal or state permit. But I think what you're referring to is the pipeline system, possibly.
Maybe that was it.
I think it was the,
and they were
going to,
it was mostly for export. And, you know, people were protesting, you know, because, you know, if anything went wrong with that facility, it would impact New York City and Long Island and New Jersey. It was just crazy.
Right.
So did that get squashed?
We were not involved in that issue. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Adrian, you're just such great work. You have your hands in so many different things. Before we run out of time, because we are just about out of time, can you share with everybody how they can find out more about the Citizens Campaign for the Environment and get involved?
Yes, please just feel free to log on our website at citizenscampaign.org, O-R-G. When you go on, the easiest and the best thing to do is to please just sign up for our email action alert. And, you know, we don't send them out all the time, so you're not going to get 10 a day, we promise. You might get a few a week, maybe, but maybe not even that many. We send them out to folks when something current is happening, and it'll tell people what the issue is, and who you should send an email to or a letter or make a phone call to. If you're not interested in that issue, you hit delete. If you're interested in that issue, you can, you know, participate that way. And it really is impacting. It helps out a lot. So you can also like us on Facebook. That's another great way. It's Citizens Campaign for the Environment on Facebook. Or follow us on Twitter. So there's, you know, and I forgot Instagram. Sorry about that. But, you know, you can just go on the website and find out all this and sign up for the action alerts. That's one of the main ways.
Wonderful. Well, Adrian, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been so, so informative. And like I said, the work that you're doing is so important. And I thank you on behalf of myself and other New Yorkers. Keep up the great work, please.
Thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Everyone out there, have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you again next week. Bye for now.